Morning, everybody. Welcome to the Portland City Council. Before we begin the official part of our proceedings, each week we ask people to come in and talk to us about issues that affect children and young people. And we always ask the question is, how are the children? And that question is important because we know that when our children are well, our community is well. So this morning, we have three students from Jefferson High School. If Alvin Johnson, Celeste Jackson, and Mahogany Black could please come forward. They belong to a group called REAP. REAP stands for Reaching and Empowering All People, and the purpose is to inspire, engage, and empower youth and individuals to achieve personal development, maximize performance levels, and accomplish academic success and community leadership. The program is in several school districts, including Portland, Beaverton, and the David Douglas districts. So thank you for being here this morning, and whoever would like to start, please do.
Good morning. My name is Celeste Jackson, and I'm senior class president at Jefferson High School associated with REAP. First of all, I just want to say good morning, and I would like to invite you guys out to our conference. It's the Challenge Conference, and our theme is As I Rise. Last year, it was We're Not the Problem, but We're the Solution. But as we had that conference, we were elevated to another level. And now, as I rise to another level, Jeff is coming out. And so this conference gives us such an opportunity to be heard and to fix some of the challenges that we have at Jeff. I mean, every school has their problems, but I believe that as we as the students are rising, that the school as one will rise together too. So I really encourage you guys to come out and be a part and support us as we're changing for the better. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Mahogany Black. I'm a senior at Jefferson High School and a varsity cheerleader and coordinator with REAP. Our conference on October 5th gives us a chance as Jefferson High School students to basically let our voice be heard. And yes, that's how you should come.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Alvin Johnson. I am the captain of the varsity football team at Jefferson, and I'm also working with REAP. And I also think that you guys should come to the conference because, as she said, it's an opportunity for us to be heard, and it's some problems that we need to work with at Jeff, and it also allows the students to be closer to the staff at Jefferson. So I think you guys should come and support.
Tell us a little bit about REAP and how you folks are involved with that.
REAP is an organization that is a part of Jeff, and they came last year, and the coordinator is Mr. Jackson. And he allowed us to fill out an application, and then a selected few students were picked. And so we were working on the conference. And what the conference is, like we've told you, is just an opportunity for our voice to be heard to change Jeff. And so us as the students, we had the opportunity to let them know the things that were going on at Jeff that we wanted to change. And so it's really about us as the students. And so the organization really helps us to be heard instead of different people that are outside of the school that think they know what Jeff is about, but actually inside the school, inside the hallways, the people that are using the lockers, the people that are using the pencils, our voices are being heard.
Excellent. I will check my calendar and see what time I have available. And whatever time I have available, I'll come out and visit you folks. That sounds really exciting.
Thank you.
Do you have other folks from the program here, too?
Yeah.
Yes, we have a group.
Could you have them stand up as well, be recognized? Look at that. That's great. All that future leadership. Well, thank you very much for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah, let's give these folks a hand. Thank you. Always makes me feel better when I see young folks like that, knowing that our future leadership in Portland is going to be well served by these folks. City Council will come to order. Please call the roll.
Adams.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Salzman. Sten. Potter.
Here. I would like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity he or she is authorized to represent. Please read the communication.
Request of Harlan Hiltner to address council regarding privatization of parking spaces and developers and the infrastructure. Is Mr. Hiltner here?
Is that all the communications?
Yes, sir.
Okay, then we'll move to the consent agenda. Are there any commissioners who wish to pull any item from the consent agenda? Is there any member of this audience who wishes to pull any item from the consent agenda? Please call the vote.
Adams.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Sten.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read the 9:30 time certain.
Amend secondhand dealer regulations.
Staff.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. My name is Sue Klobertons. I'm Director for the Revenue Bureau. The ordinance you have before you to amend the City Code, Chapter 14B.90, has been in the works for almost 2 years. It reflects the work of both staff and industry. This Portland City Code, the purpose of it is to regulate certain business activities that present a risk to our citizens of being used by criminals to dispose of stolen property. The risk is present despite the best efforts of legitimate businesses. The proposed code changes you have before you today are intended to reduce this type of criminal activity by providing timely police awareness of these various transactions and by regulating how this type of business activity occurs. Normally, I would wait to the end of the presentation to recognize staff, but I think it's important on this particular ordinance to recognize our staff people up front for their patience and perseverance. These are the people that are city employees who are your face and voice in the community during the last 2 years on this topic. And during this process, I believe that the staff has engaged the industry and begun to make dealers feel as if they are a part of the solution instead of the problem. Staff for the City of Portland, particularly, I'd like to recognize Sergeant Troy King to my right from the Portland Police Bureau, the Special Property Investigations Unit, or the SPY detail. Officer Brent Bates is in the audience, also from Portland Police Bureau. Ann Holm to my left from the Revenue Bureau, and then also the help from the City Attorney's Office. These folks have been working tirelessly to bring this ordinance present before you today. To start the presentation today, I'd like to ask Sergeant King to review with you the amendment process, the process that we've been following in the community, other police improvements and changes that have been made to address this issue, and then finally the benefits to both the city and the dealer of these code changes. So, Troy?
Thank you. Good morning. It's been almost 2 years since you asked us to look at the code and make changes, identify key police tools that needed to be added or adapted into the code. Focus group was formed after that direction was given, involving law enforcement, the DA's office, people from the loss prevention arena, as well as dealers. And in moving forward on these key points of change, meeting with the dealers, we found that not only were there police tools that needed to be developed into the code, but also there were some really important changes that needed to be made on the industry side. What we found is that there are a variety of business models in place in the secondhand dealer community. There are almost 140 of these businesses, and they're not identical to each other. They present different challenges to combating the thieves who want to come in and sell property to them, as well as helping us to develop evidence against those folks. So considering that, we set out also to make changes that would make the code more reasonable and more appropriate given the businesses that would be regulated by it. We had several public meetings, multiple one-on-one and small group sessions with people from the secondhand dealer community, as well as other law enforcement, loss prevention folks, And what we came up with, the code that you have before you to consider, it does three really major things. First of all, it provides some very important changes for the police in terms of tools to combat the theft problem. It improves our ability to detect theft and stolen property being sold at these locations. It improves our ability to deter thieves from coming to these establishments. And it also gives us important tools to prosecute the thieves when they are able to sell their property at these places. Secondly, the changes have allowed or provided an opportunity for the Revenue Bureau in conjunction with the Police Bureau to really have compliance across the board throughout the industry. One of the things that we found and the complaints that we heard was that we were asking some dealers who were being very conscientious about filling out the slips and getting all of the information and holding their property, they were complaining that there were others in the industry that really weren't being as conscientious. And when we had approached some of those folks, what we found was that it was difficult for them, given the business model that they had and the explanation behind the old code, to really work that into their system. We explained to them that that's obviously necessary so that we can have that uniform compliance across the board. But at the same time, we've made changes in this code that will make that easier for them to do without taking away anything from our ability to go after the thieves. Now, the third thing that we did here and in this code is that we brought the secondhand dealers in as part of the solution, as Ms. Sue has mentioned. That really is, I think, probably the biggest thing that's happened through this process. I personally, and Anne can echo this, have learned a lot about what we actually did not understand about the industry. So they've educated us, and we've made, I think, some appropriate changes. So, as I said, it's going to be stronger for the police, it's going to be more enforceable for the Revenue Bureau, and it's going to be more reasonable for the dealers. Just to let you know, we recognize that the changes to the secondhand dealer code are not the solution to the problem. They're part of the solution, and we have done other things in the meantime to address the problem. We've created partnerships over this last year and a half, particularly with the Revenue Bureau. Our two bureaus work very closely. A couple times a week, at least, we're together working on issues outside the code rewrite. We also have partnered with other pawn shop and secondhand dealer investigators in the metro area to try to have a uniform approach to the problem throughout this area. We've also partnered with loss prevention folks. When someone at, say, Target makes an arrest of someone who's a serial thief, they call us. We interview that person and find out who they're selling their stuff to so that we can target the problem and focus our attention in that way. And we have partnered, as I said, with the secondhand industry. We get phone calls. And information that they're not required to give us about people so that they can assist us in our efforts. So it's an important improvement there. Some future steps that are down the road, the electronic reporting system is a big thing for us. Right now we receive about 10,000 secondhand dealer reports, those little slips, every month. Those are processed by hand, many of them, and that becomes a cumbersome for the police as well as for the dealers. So we are working on that, what we call the RAPID system, this electronic reporting system. It is mentioned in the code. It's not implemented or funded or anything through the code at this point because we believe that the process of getting that in place really needs to be similar to the process of getting this code in place, and that is we have to work with those who will be using it and find out really how best to implement it without impacting people negatively. So, but that is to come. We've put out our RFP on that. And we have a couple of companies that we're looking at there. We also have been working with the DA's office and the circuit court and the city attorney's office on resolving or developing a process to resolve the issue over property that's seized by the police. Right now we have, unfortunately, property in our evidence division that has been there in some cases for years because of disputed property ownership issues, and we haven't had a process to resolve that, and so we're moving forward on that. I think we're getting close to actually having a process there. And then lastly, the metal recycling issue is something that we haven't attempted to address specifically in this code. That is, as you are aware, a completely different group of folks who have some unique issues and challenges, and we did take it into account, and so in the administrative rule process, if we were to add non-ferrous metals as a regulated item, then that would pull in metal recyclers as secondhand dealers in that way. But we really think that before doing that, we need to spend the time with those in the industry to see what the issues are there in terms of holding, reporting, and that sort of thing. I think after you hear the speakers that are here, I just want to mention there are folks from the industry here, people from the DA's office, people from corporate loss prevention that are here, that some will speak and some will be available for questions. And after you hear from them, I think you'll agree that what we've come up with is really a pretty decent product and it will serve the city well. Thank you.
Questions?
Yes.
Were you not through?
No, we have a couple next steps. I think it's important to realize that in addition to this code, we also have administrative rules that need to be adopted. The Revenue Bureau director by code has the responsibility of drafting those rules, and we're in the process now. We've posted those on our website and distributed them to the industry. If the council approves these code changes, what we'll do is we'll have a public hearing scheduled following the second hearing and approval of these code changes, and we will be ready for the implementation date of October 26th that is currently written into the ordinance. We can either take questions now, or it might be important for you to hear Ann Holm, the program administrator for the secondhand dealers from the Revenue Bureau, was going to introduce the industry speakers that we have here with us today. So we can either do questions now or after the speakers.
Either way.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead, Ann?
Okay. We have, I'm Ann Holm from the Revenue Bureau, and we've invited some people to speak that have worked with us on the code changes, and they represent the industry. We also have a representative from the Small Business Advisory Committee. I'd like to introduce Steve Souza, Vice President of All That Glitters, Eric Tonkin, owner of Selwood Cycle Repair, Deke Haykamp, President of Next Adventure, and Judy Crane from the Small Business Advisory Committee.
Good morning, Mayor Potter.
Hang on just a second while we get the other folks. Thanks. When you speak, please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Mayor, City Council members. My name is Steve Souza from All the Glitters, Jewelry, and Loans. I am here today at the request of Earl Oler, who is out of town and unable to address you in person. At this time, I would like to read to you his comments. My name is Earl Oler. I am the owner of Silver Lining Jewelry and Loan Company, president of the Oregon Pawnbrokers Association, and on the board of trustees for the National Pawnbrokers Association. My involvement in pawnbroking spans 37 years in the Portland area. I have served on numerous committees, including a task force on stolen property in the early 90s. I was one of two members outside of police and government officials to attend. I represented the pawnbrokers while someone else represented the secondhand dealers. It was through this interaction that we produced a very comprehensive secondhand dealers pawnbrokers ordinance in Portland. The pawnbroking industry is a very misunderstood industry by both the public and government officials. Although we do buy merchandise on occasion, the majority of our business is in collateral loans. These loans are short-term with interest rates that are set by the state of Oregon. Our customers come from all walks of life and as of such have different lending needs. On a whole, the percentage of our customers that forfeit their loans is about 12%. The average throughout the state is 20%, with the Oregon Department of Consumer Business Services statistics showing 80% of customers redeeming their merchandise. Statistics also show that of the 411,610 loans written statewide, only 204 were picked up by the police. This number representing less than 1% or 0.06 to be exact. The national percentage rate of police loss depends on a lot of factors, such as time, length of loan, and interest rates. This percentage also equals a very small amount. We are regulated by many agencies, including the Bureau of ATF, Division of Consumer Business Services, Bank Secrecy Act, U.S. Patriot Act, Truth in Lending Act, Graham-Leach and Bliley Act, FTC Privacy Act, and more. A new ordinance that affects the way we do business is something that we take very seriously. As you know, to make a buy is a simple transaction involving only the regulation aspects of the Portland Police Bureau. However, as you also know, making a collateral loan involves the interface of more than 15 separate city, state, and federal regulators. When we heard that the city was looking to make a major change to the secondhand pawnbroker's ordinance, we were skeptical that our concerns would not be recognized. The process started off very shakily with a city mandate that the ordinance be before city council within a very short time. The Portland Police Bureau representatives at that time rushed through a series of meetings with secondhand dealers and pawnbrokers, which were aimed to inform us about a list of changes the police and the city wanted to make to the ordinance. I felt at that time the process was going way too fast. The proposed changes we're asked to consider had not been thought out, especially the impact that it would have on our industry. Discussions and decisions were going on at a higher level that did not include us. This was very frustrating for me. I am supposed to be representing the pawnbroker's concerns, and I can only be allowed to contribute on a superficial level, not on a level where the actual decisions were being made. It was fortunate for us that a change in command structure at the Bureau happened when it did. We voiced our concerns at that time, and as a result, the process slowed way down. Yes, our discussions have gone on for a longer period of time than perhaps the Police Bureau and the City Council wanted, but the final product is a true collaboration. We did not, by any means, get everything that we wanted, but the final product is a workable ordinance and something that the pawnbrokers can live with. As we have said in the past, and I will say to you now, please, in the future, make us a part of the solution to any of the problems that come up regarding our industry. We want the bad guys dealt with as much as you. Thank you for allowing Steve to read this to you on my behalf. I have one last comment. If not for Sergeant Troy King and his efforts to actively listen and understand our concerns over these passing months, we never would have accomplished what we have. I'd also like to thank Ann Holm of the Licensing Division and David Wobbler for taking the time to meet with us on several occasions. Thank you.
My name is Eric Tonkin, and I'm owner of Selwood Cycle Repair in Southeast Portland, not surprisingly. I'm going to probably echo what Steve just said. I want to thank Troy and Jeff Nelson from the Special Property Investigations Unit for their hard work. I think they went out of their way to visit each business affected by the code. And this simple act of dedication really set the tone. I knew from almost day one that I had more trust in the process as a result of that dedication and time. Once the change in tone was established, the police resolved to change the code's purpose. They got that right, too. They acknowledged that those of us who have been a part of this process are indeed part of the solution, and that the goal wasn't simply to criminalize our small businesses. I think most important, this is a flexible document. Note 14B.90.090B, if you can remember that. It's the review by administrative rules, and it's the crux of the code. It's what will undoubtedly allow a small, unique business like my own, which is a consignment-only specialty bike shop. We do not buy any used regulated property. It's this part of the code that's going to allow my business to essentially comply with the code and not suffer for it like I have been. I don't need to tell you guys that politics is by definition compromise. I come before you a man who didn't get what he ultimately wanted, but I recognize the value of the finished product. It's the result of a sound process negotiated by competent and reasonable people. I certainly hope the council adopts the proposed changes, and when the administrative rules come up for review, that you do the same. And thank you very much for your time.
Yes, my name is Deke Heikamp. I'm the owner of Next Adventure, which is a used sporting goods store we do new and used on in Southeast Portland. I'm going to echo a lot what is said here, which kind of tells me that the process worked. I came to this process extremely skeptical. I participated in the same process about 6 years ago and was not only unsatisfied, but it was a horrible experience. It was not pleasant at all. So I kind of came expecting a fight. It's pretty surprising to me that I'm here in support of the ordinance today. And I'm here in support not because small businesses like to be regulated. I don't think there's any of us that need that extra headache, but because of the leadership and the cooperation that was put forth by the police bureau and Ann Holmes included, it really made this a very cooperative effort. And if honest businesses like ours are going to be regulated, I think we have a right to ask that that it's reasonable that we can comply, and it's reasonable that the ordinance is enforceable. And I think all of those things have been addressed. I can only go to the leadership of the police bureau to say that they created a future. They were able to show us the future of the ordinance and what the whole program will look like, including computerized monitoring, things that where we can share information so that we can handle those issues in our stores almost immediately, which will make us, again, a part of the solution rather than a part of the problem. So I'm going to urge you also to support this. I also am going to urge you to allocate resources and support the future steps and monitor the progress as we go forward. Thank you again for your consideration.
Thank you, folks. Is Judy Crane going to testify? Please come forward.
Good morning. My name is Judy Crane, and I operate Holman's Bar and Grill on 28th and East Burnside. I'm here as a member of your Small Business Advisory Council, where I'm the chair of the Cost of Doing Business Committee. In June, Sue and her staff brought this issue to our committee and explained the proposed changes to the secondhand dealer code. We were pleased by the inclusion of new items in the code, as well as the enhanced record-keeping requirements, and I am expressing our support for these changes. As business owners who are often the victim of the crimes which this ordinance is designed to curtail, we welcome these changes and encourage your adoption of this ordinance. As you are aware, small business is often the target of thieves. These theft losses are subtracted directly from the bottom line and can be financially devastating for small business. We also applaud Sue and her efforts to include early in the process, the businesses affected by these regulations. Small business always appreciates the opportunity to provide input when government considers new or amended rules. Our committee was also unanimous in our hope that you will next address the issue of the increase in the theft of metals, which was not covered by this ordinance, since those losses can be crippling or even fatal to small business in Portland. Thank you.
Questions?
Yes.
Who would you like to have?
Sergeant King. So, as I recall, Sergeant King, just so that's I think the public watching this is appreciative of what they've heard this morning and the work that's being done to improve accountability of items sold at secondhand stores and pawn shops. But the frame of reference this occurred within was quite explosive at the time, emanating, I think, from, as I recall, an investigative report by the Oregonian wherein it was determined that a number of items for sale, by the way, none of the shops we heard from here today, but other shops around Portland were easily traced to stores such as Walmart, who had the items stolen. So they actually had stickers on them with barcodes on them, and one could have easily figured out by doing the minimal amount of work that it was stolen. So I think the concern was, why weren't officers recognizing that? And, of course, the other concern was there was an allegation, and I want you to be able to explain to me how that has flushed out, that, in fact, some of the officers assigned to the unit alerted some secondhand owners that the FBI was investigating some of those allegations. So I need to be satisfied that not only are you doing what you did here, which it appears good, but we've addressed this broader problem that seemed to be at least unprofessional relationships between some of our officers and secondhand store owners, and are we doing, what have we done to capture the most obvious kinds of stolen items that some of the stores were selling?
All right. Well, with regard to the allegations that occurred 2 years ago, I wasn't in the detail at the time, and I can't say that I can speak to what was going on in the detail at the time. I can tell you that through my conversations with those in the industry and people involved in those incidents, I don't personally know of anything supporting allegations that there was some sort of unprofessional relationship between the police bureau and any of the secondhand dealers. That's my personal knowledge, and that's all I can speak to.
Is there anybody here? I appreciate that you weren't involved in that, but is there anybody from the police bureau that can speak to that?
I don't know.
I talked to the police bureau yesterday, to the assistant chief, Rod Beard. He informed me that the FBI has completed their investigation, okay, and have turned it over to the United States Attorney's Office for review, and that's all we have in the way of information at this time.
With regard to the
just to finish up on that thought, is the personnel any different in that unit than what it was 2 years ago?
Yes. There isn't anybody in the spy detail now who was in the detail then. I replaced the sergeant of the detail who retired, and the two detectives who were in the detail at the time also have retired since then. You'll be happy to know that we do have seven personnel assigned to the detail now.
Excellent.
Which is an increase, and we certainly appreciate that support. And that has had a pretty significant impact on how we've been able to address some of these other underlying problems. The issue of new merchandise being shoplifted and sold to our dealers is an ongoing problem. It will probably continue to be an ongoing problem, but we have made some improvements in the code, I think, that will help.
And I have written down here to ask you what those are specifically.
Right.
So my example I gave, I recall specifically reading the story and thinking, this just seems easy. I mean, if you see a new item and it has a Walmart sticker on it, and I think, in fact, if it wasn't Walmart, it was Home Depot, but a recognizable chain, how hard would it be to determine whether or not that item had been reported stolen? What have we done to the system to be able to do that?
Well, the first thing is that new items will be regulated under this new code. And so where in the past a person could shoplift 10 electric razors from Walmart and sell them to a dealer and that was never reported, that is not the case under this new code. So we'll be aware when a certain person sells 10 razors. One, it's reported, so we'll now receive a ticket for each of those transactions.
How does the officer standing in the secondhand store looking at the razor connect that it was stolen and reported? What is the system that makes that happen?
That's the second piece, which is the challenge. We have been working with some of the loss prevention folks to do work on their end to help us identify that. The problem has always been that these razors can all have Walmart stickers, but if Walmart doesn't have a way to track the individual razors to say those were stolen from this store, then we have a proof issue.
Well, I want to be real clear. The example I gave, they were reported stolen. And I think it was mixers or something. Mm-hmm. Whatever it was, they were reported stolen items that had new stickers on them. And I'm wondering, as you testified, you mentioned the RAPID system.
Yes.
It's not in place yet. Is that the system that would connect immediately the dots between items reported stolen and an officer entering data at a secondhand store that would match up with something stolen?
It will significantly help in that area. more in the area of burglaries where the items taken are more distinctive and typically the serial numbers. Shoplifted items from stores, oftentimes, even if a store knows what they lost, they may not know the serial numbers of the items because the items are sealed in a box.
Right.
It will help, though, still in that area. The system that we put out the RFP on, one of the things we asked it to do was to be able to automatically take the list of transaction records from secondhand dealers and compare that to the list of items entered into the Portland Police Data System as stolen, and to compare those items and then give us a scored printout as to possible matches so that we can start at the top of the list and go, this is a 99% score, this is probably a match to this burglary, and then focus our efforts there. Right now, we still are stuck in the old system of reading all of these reports and trying to match the tickets.
So that's the ideal system we're working towards.
Yes.
So today you have new officers that are assigned to the unit. They're
correct.
Aware of some of the problems in the past. I'm knowing your officers the way I do, I'm pretty sure they're working very hard to separate themselves from the past. So they see something that arouses, they see a saw with the Walmart sticker on it. What do they do now to satisfy themselves that that's a legitimate item for sale?
Well, one of the first things that we did was in building these relationships with the dealers, because that Walmart item, as an example, may not be written up at this point because it's not regulated, we have to rely on them to be conscientious to tell us who it was that brought that in. And if they don't know at that time?
Currently. I'm asking under
all right, in
code,
the future.
The code
under the code,
adopted.
We would walk in and see that razor. There would be a number, as required by the code, on the razor that tells us who the person was that sold it. All right, so we'll know that instantaneously, either from the computer or if we're standing in a store, we would ask the person at the business, pull this ticket, tell us who it is that brought this item in. We have contacts with Walmart, with Target, Safeway, Fred Meyer, some of the major chains in the area that we can call, Home Depot, the larger ones. We can call and say, we've got this guy who's bringing in three of these, let's say, table saws. Does this name ring a bell? Does this face ring a bell? And we have gotten a positive response. We cannot control, though, what the industry does in terms of dealing with their theft problem.
The industry being the Walmart store.
That's what I mean, yes.
So I guess my question is, what I've tried to understand, what is the legitimate reason people would be bringing something in a new box to a secondhand store to sell it? Give me a reason why anybody would legitimately, in other words, I want to be really clear, I'm asking, what would the secondhand store owner be thinking when somebody came in and said, I bought this brand new saw for $250, will you buy it for
$50? Mm-hmm.
In a box.
I have to tell you, when I started down the road of working through this code, I could not think of a legitimate reason other than two toasters at a wedding. But I...
well, but with the second toaster, you give that to somebody else for their wedding.
I suppose. I've got one. Let me know if you have. And I'll tell you, the stance that the police bureau took was no new items. We decided
yes.
We couldn't think of a legitimate reason, new items.
You're getting to another question I was going to ask.
Okay.
And I appreciate the collaboration, what I've heard here, but sometimes that sets off bells for me. Because I'm curious about what it is that you wanted to have put in this ordinance that you didn't get in the ordinance as a result of this process. Is that one of them? Is that you didn't prohibit the sale, the resale of new items?
No, I don't think that we backed off of a single thing without good reason.
Take that one for example. Why wouldn't you just say
the idea of asking the shops to turn away every new item was a bad idea.
Why?
Because there are many legitimate reasons why a person would bring something in. So let me give you some examples.
Okay.
As I said, when I came into this, I couldn't think of a single one. And so we said, no new items. And we had a public meeting to talk about that, and it was an interesting experience for me. I'll give you just one real-life example. Contractor. He's having some problems with his business, keeping things afloat, but he has a contractor's credit card. Some people promised to pay on some jobs that he did, and they didn't come through. So he went down to one of the local building supply stores and consistently over a period of a couple of months charged a bunch of new items on his card,
mm-hmm.
and then pawned them thinking that when that person pays, I'll be able to go back and get that stuff, and then I'll be able to use that eventually over time anyway. So he had a legitimate reason for pawning or selling, in either case, getting rid of brand new, in-the-box, high-end contractor tools that he legitimately purchased on his credit card. He had a good reason for doing that.
Is that a real example? Or is that
that's a real example. No,
how many examples of like that are there?
I've heard from a number of people about plenty of examples. You've got the person who, let's say you buy your wife a nice watch for her birthday, all right? Brand new in the box, she opens it and she says, oh, you know, thank you, but what were you thinking, right? So she goes down to the local watch store and says, you know, there is a watch I've been kind of looking at, and I'd like to get that. So she takes the watch that you bought, she goes down to this other watch store and says, I'd like to, if I can, trade this in and get this other watch, okay?
Brand new in the box. Why would she just take it back?
She could. That's one thing that she could do. Perhaps.
No, I mean, why wouldn't you? I mean, why would you take and trade something in to get a lesser amount than at Costco? And as I've said here often, if you can't find it at Costco, you don't need it. So you buy it at Costco, the ring, and then my wife doesn't like it. And I actually bought my wife's wedding ring at Costco, as a matter of fact. And I go back to Costco. She's probably cursing me right now.
She should be.
At home. But why wouldn't she go back and get the full amount rather than some discounted amount?
Oftentimes that's what people do, and I think in most cases that's what people do. But sometimes that watch...
I want you to understand. I don't want you to get defensive about these
questions. No, I'm not. No.
This is a form in which we agree or not with the changes you've made, and I respect what you've done. In fact, I know how hard it is to do what you've done. And I know the challenges involved in that. So I'm asking these questions because I want to make sure when we pass this and you leave, you have the best tools available and not compromised tools.
Sure.
And I am deeply concerned over what I recall was a big deal, which was the resale of new stuff. And let's be clear what the new stuff meant. Not opened in a box, sealed with the store's name and scan stuff on the box. That I appreciate the two examples you gave. Those to me don't outweigh the concern that I have of new items being stolen and then sold to a secondhand dealer. I hear that there are some examples where that may cause a hardship. And in all of these things that we do, we must balance competing interests. And in my view, what I'm hearing right now hasn't tipped the balance in favor of allowing those kinds of purchases by secondhand dealers because of the really horrible problem. If I recall correctly, and I didn't read the article again before today, I probably should have, but there are other communities that actually do ban the sale of new items, I shouldn't say the sale, the purchase of new items in a box by secondhand dealers. And I get that we need to work with the industry on the one hand. On the other hand, we have a big obligation, a huge obligation to, as we heard from the Small Business Advisory Council, to make sure that what we're adopting protects the public and protects the retailers as well. And it seems to me this is a loophole that it feels like we need to maybe do a little more talking about before we adopt this ordinance.
Well, if I can, if I may respond to that, to share another part of the code with you that addresses that issue.
Okay.
One of the 14 points that came out of this focus group was that we should specifically prohibit in the code the purchase of stolen property. All right? State law already does that. State law already says you can't knowingly buy stolen property. But what we found is that that is a very high standard.
Yeah.
To prove that a person at the counter knew that the item was stolen is difficult, right? The other challenge that we found when we started running undercover officers into some of these locations was that there is a stumbling block that we have in which the police can't actually sell stolen property to a shop. If I'm a police officer and I sell something, it by its nature is not stolen. And therefore, if the person buys it from me, they're not committing the crime of theft by receiving.
What's an example of that?
What do you mean?
Did you say the police selling something to a shop?
Undercover sting.
Yeah, undercover sting.
Oh, okay.
We wanted to address two things. We wanted to address this idea of three skill saws coming in from the same guy in a week.
Gotcha.
All right? And we wanted to address our ability to test whether people were doing that or not. All right? And so what we did is we put a block of language in the code that says that a dealer may not acquire an item of regulated property under circumstances in which a reasonable person would believe that more likely than not, the item is stolen, all right, whether or not it's actually stolen, okay?
Right.
So, and that is a standard that many people in the industry already abide by.
Right.
The people you heard from today, when the guy comes in with the second, they might buy the first story, but the second time, it ain't going to fly, and the guy's out the door, okay? We wanted that standard to be in place across the board so that we could expect that when this repeat person comes in with new items, that the shops will know. The standard is a reasonable person will look at that and say that your explanation doesn't fly and turn them away.
I hear you, and that's a fair standard. And I don't mean to imply at all that I'm even suggesting impugning somebody's integrity that owns one of these stores that buys this stuff. I'm just saying they could, you know, they run a business. They have to sell stuff to make a business.
Mm-hmm.
So their incentive is to buy stuff cheap and be able to resell it. If it's in a box, that's a pretty good thing to represent to the buying public that this is a brand new item. So there's that dynamic that exists. I would imagine if a person came in and said, I'm a contractor, I have some bills that are owed to me, as soon as these are paid, I'm going to come back and get this. That's okay by that. Okay, say no more. Got it. Take it and leave. The problem is we have people running around Portland right now representing that they live up in Welch's and they're a contractor and they don't have any money and they lost their car and they're out of gas. Can you give me $5? And people go, okay, and they give them $5. Well, it's a scam.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on? As you know well better than I do, a scam would probably also include addressing that very criteria you just gave. Make sure when you go in to sell this thing in a box, you come up with a reason, and it's a reason that makes sense. So I guess my approach is more, of course people are going to do that, and of course the store owner is going to hear that and go, okay, that sounds reasonable, I'll buy it. But don't we know better? And shouldn't we be saying, okay, there are very, very actual legitimate, very, very few legitimate cases in which somebody needs to sell something to a secondhand store in a new box. I mean, common sense tells you to take it back to the store and get a full refund. The reason they don't take it back to the store to get a full refund is as soon as the checker scans it and goes, oh, you know what, that's interesting, this is shown stolen.
Commissioner Leonard, just we may have missed the obvious in our answer to this, in that new items are now regulated under this proposed code. It does allow the secondhand dealer, if he's got a receipt and all of the information that's required, to go ahead and resale that property. But if he doesn't have that receipt, then it is a regulated item that is not to be resold.
A receipt from
for 30 days.
So there are businesses out there who will go to closeout sales. So once a year, Home Depot has its parking lot sale, and I may go buy at a very reduced rate 6 large table saws. They're in the box. I have a receipt from Home Depot. I take them to the secondhand dealer or the pawn shop. And then that is why I would, in exchange, sell them possibly for a profit. And there are businesses that make their living by doing that.
So are you telling me that that the new ordinance requires new items in a box to be accompanied by a receipt before the pawn broker can purchase it?
No. The new items can be purchased, and they have to be written up. The issue of a receipt has to do with whether or not the item will have to be held for the full period or
right.
not.
So that the police can come back and check it out.
But how does that get to what I'm, and I'm confused.
I think she was just clarifying the issue.
It gets the suspect property into the system for the police to check on.
Which we've just heard we don't have yet.
No, if there it's held for 30 days.
Yeah.
But we've heard
we don't have the rapid system. I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm sorry.
That's my point. If you recall, I asked at first, do we have the ability to go in, look at an item on a shelf, scan it, and go, oh, that's stolen? What I heard back was we're working on that.
Right.
We have a system that will be in place to do that. I think that will help a lot.
Correct.
So I'm assuming that it's an imperfect system now, and what I'm trying to figure out is why we allow purchases of items in a box when we can't verify that they're, in fact, legitimately being resold.
One of, and there are people here who probably have some real life examples that could speak to your question about how does this occur where someone legitimately sells property that they may want to speak, but.
I'm actually beyond that. I'm just trying to figure out, I mean, I'm assuming the scenario I gave is one, because I'm seeing some nodding heads, that is commonplace, that the police deals with, that most of the items that are resold are not for legit, haven't been purchased for legitimate reasons. Maybe some, certainly most of them are suspect.
Well, one of the points that was brought out.
Why would they ban new purchases is my question.
I'll answer that question. Okay. One of the points that was brought out when I spoke with people from the industry and said, the purpose of this code is to help us deter theft, all right, by limiting the outlet for these stolen items. And they said, well, how does that make sense then? If you're telling us to turn away every person who has a new item, how do you then find out who the serial thieves are? And I thought it was a valid point. I thought it through. As this person brings in three or four items.
Serial thief is the person who brought it in?
Yes. If a person goes to Walmart, we're using that as an example, and steals 10 items and sells those 10 items at 10 different dealer locations to avoid this repeat thing, because thieves will adapt no matter what our code says, right? If a person does that, because they're regulated, because they're allowed to purchase them, because the folks who are reporting and are contributing the data to the police would be allowed to buy that, we would then realize that this person has sold 10 of these same items. That gives us something to go on. Now, we probably won't be able to run the serial number on any of those 10 items and say that was stolen from this Walmart store. That's the reality for now on the retail side. But what we can do and what we have done is we can contact Walmart and say, we have a guy who sold 10 of these. Can you check your inventory and see if you're missing 10 of these items from one of your stores? And we've gotten stores to say, yes, we have. We just recently did a $30,000 eBay case with Target that was a result of that. A serial person that we were made aware of, and we worked with them, and they were able to say, yeah, there is a pattern here. And we do see these items disappearing from the shelves of this one store. And the next step was they enacted more intense video surveillance, and we got this person stealing, doing all of that, and we were able to develop the case. So by getting these new items in the system where we are aware of who these people are, that gives us the ability to reach back to the retail folks and say, we have something we need to talk about.
But a guy goes in to Division Hardware on 35th and Division, steals a Black & Decker grill, one in a box off the shelf, goes to a secondhand store, sells it. How does that fall into any of these scenarios?
It really doesn't.
It doesn't. And I would suspect most of them are kind of like that are happening more. Not so much organized, but the meth folks and the people that are driven by the need to have to buy drugs are not as organized as what you described and are going to steal an item. And I guess I'm just not hearing something to satisfy me. That
if I may jump in, Dekai Kam from Next Adventure. The probably the best thing, and unfortunately you're probably asking the wrong person. I too was at that meeting, and so you're trying to condense a two-hour meeting that was quite heated into a 30-second soundbite to understand the nuances of the industry. The number one thing that comes from this ordinance is that it is enforceable. Okay, and we can comply. I buy new and used goods. Skis happen to be under the ordinance of under the controlled merchandise. I buy new skis. I buy used skis. I buy skis from salesman samples, brand new in the plastic, no receipt, and I buy off the street, people who have skied on them for 10 years. So you have, by understanding that these situations do happen, because they do, there are many legitimate reasons why someone would bring in a new piece. Now, the scenarios that you're talking about, one guy brings in 10 table saws over a period of time. Legitimate, not legitimate? Probably not. But what this does is it opens up a dialogue and it opens up the communication with the police bureau that we can actually go after that person rather than saying, well, I'm not supposed to buy new stuff. I'll just create a cat and mouse game out of it, which is what has happened over the past number of years because it was not a reasonable business could not comply. It was not reasonable. So to say you're in a legitimate business, a law-abiding, reasonable business, you do buy used goods from new goods from time to time, or you do a combination of both, let's control the things that we can control. This as a first step, this ordinance, and believe me, you're not going to find someone who is more skeptical than me walking into this situation. So what this does is it allows us to purchase, okay? It forces us to comply, and it creates that communication such that as this the first step happens, then the next step of having the computerized system then becomes very applicable. So I would urge you, if it is something that concerns you greatly with regards to, you know, what are legitimate reasons, we certainly can rehash that, because we did for 2 hours at a meeting. There are many legitimate reasons.
I'd like to ask a question of Sergeant King. Is that prior to this, new goods were not part of the secondhand ordinance. Is that correct?
That's correct.
This changes that.
It does.
And I think that there's an acknowledgement from you and from Sue and everybody that this is the first step, that this isn't the end of it, that there are still other issues out there to be resolved, such as scrap metal.
Yes.
And so this gets us on the road, A, to being able to deal with new items, but recognizing that there are probably areas where we still need to refine it, but at least it gets us off the ground in an area that we have not had before.
It does, and there are some new items that we have completely banned. Gift cards, for example, medications. Rogaine is a big nationwide theft item, which obviously I haven't been using.
Rogaine?
Believe it or not, a big item.
Could you tell you the commissioner where to get it?
Where can I get it? So why would you ban that? That's the one thing I probably think was okay.
But some of those items that we know are big theft items and are not something that a contractor is going to buy, and there aren't really any decent, legitimate reasons for. Those things are completely banned in the code. The other thing that we did is we moved the list of regulated items into the administrative rules, because we need the flexibility to look at the trends of theft.
So could you, in the administrative rules at some point, if based on your experience with how this new ordinance is working, ban the purchase of new items by secondhand folks via the administrative rule, or would you have to come back to council for an amendment?
I'm not sure I know I have to look at the code. We have mentioned, maybe Ann knows the answer to this. It is an administrative rule. Okay.
So we could, by a rule at some point in the future, say this isn't working, we're banning.
We could. I'm sorry.
I'll finish here.
Some of the areas that we have backed off on, let's say as an example, Eric has mentioned that he's a consignment-only shop. We have said that we analyzed consignments over the past 3 years and how many stolen items were received as a result of consignments. We found zero. And the industry kept asking the question of us, why? Why is this rule in place? What's the goal of that part of the code? And it forced us to look at those and say, all right, consignments being an example, why does a consignment item have to be held for 30 days? Why can't it be sold in a shorter period of time, or at least offered for sale but still held? Why can't we find some way for business to thrive without impacting
the
police?
But is the zero the result of them not selling anything that's stolen, or the result of our inadequate tracking system?
It could be both. It could be both.
We don't know that that wasn't sold. I mean, part of the problem here is we haven't been able very well to determine what is stolen or not.
And that's really my point exactly. Where I'm going with this is that we backed off, if you will, on the hold requirements for consignments after having that conversation and looking at the issue, but we put that in the administrative rules. And if it turns out in a year we look back and say, oh, we made a mistake here, then we can step back into the business.
So I guess that gets me to the point that sounds like the thing that's going to make this work the best is having this rapid system in place. You said it's not in place because you need to do further negotiations. What did that mean?
Well, we designed a concept model for this rapid system. When we asked the companies responding to this to be able to design a system that did many things, comparing the list of stolen property with the list of sold property is one of those things.
Right.
But when we started down the road of talking about Rapid, we included the industry on that part of the conversation, and they had a couple of major concerns. One was they wanted to be sure that the data that we collected was kept within the control of the state, of the city,